This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. The new episode available each week at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host for this special episode. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers to give you insight into both what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. This week, actor Sean Marr has dropped by to talk to us about his new film, Beyond the Edge. Directed by Thomas Zellin, Beyond the Edge stars Sean as Dr. Abe Anderson. He's a scientist recruited for a long mission into space with Casper Van Dien at his side as Lieutenant Colonel Harold Richards. Their mission is simple. Take a ship propelled by theoretical physics to the far edges of the universe and let's just see what's out there. As Abe and Richards each deal with depression and isolation during their decade-plus mission, they finally reach the edge of space and their perceptions and realities of our universe are challenged. Now, many of you know Sean Marr as Simon Tam from Firefly and Serenity. Sean has also had a pretty extensive career in Hollywood. He left New York for L.A. when he landed the lead role in the Fox series Ryan Caulfield, Year One. That led to many parts in shows like Party of Five, Firefly, obviously, the Playboy Club, which he famously used as an opportunity to come out via Entertainment Weekly. And he also did a great job in the Brian Song remake many years back. If you haven't seen it, find it. He did a great job. Lately, he's also been doing some voice work. He's voicing the character of Nightwing in several animated films, and he does talk about that during the interview, as well as a little bit of Firefly and his new movie. Specifically, though, Sean stopped by to discuss this film, Beyond the Edge, formerly known as Is for 88, which arrives on video on demand from Screen Media Films on February 7th. The film is a very existential look at those two characters, but primarily Mars Abe Anderson, and it leaves you with quite a bit to debate as you reach the conclusion. And I'm glad Sean understood what I meant when we talk about that during the interview. If you haven't seen the movie, it's available now. By the time you listen to this, it will be out. You can either listen to the interview afterward or before. It doesn't matter. There are really no spoilers. Just know that if you're looking to find out if there's ever going to be a Serenity 2 or a Firefly on Netflix, that answer is not going to be in this interview. We talk primarily about Beyond the Edge. We do talk a little bit about Firefly, but it's very limited. Sean is everything you would expect, a very nice and candid conversation with an actor that has been working for many years. And someone was asking me before the interview if you were going to ask him about additional Serenity stuff or Firefly stuff. And honestly, I don't want any more. I love the way that they ended it with Serenity. I don't really see a need for it. I know I'm in the minority. But I was looking at old episodes before we did the interview, or actually a couple weeks ago. And he and Gina Torres look exactly the same. I was watching Beyond the Edge, and I kept thinking, wow, he looks exactly the same. So they could do a spinoff that maybe ended right after Serenity, go off and do their own thing. Like, their Wash is gone, and River's doing her own thing. So maybe they had to go off and have some adventures of their own, because they look exactly the same. It's insane. You don't want to hear any more about that. You want to hear the interview. So take a listen to our interview with actor Sean Marr about his new film, Beyond the Edge. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Aaron. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
Good. Good, good.
I assume you're on a junket promoting the movie?
A little bit.
Yeah?
Just lots of phoners today. Yeah.
Did I read this right? You got married last year? If so, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I did.
I don't usually keep up on the behind-the-scenes stuff. You know, I usually follow the performances and whatnot, but that's a pretty big accomplishment.
So. Oh, thanks. Yeah, I ended up changing my Twitter profile, and I guess nothing gets by anybody these days. So,
how do you change it on the Twitter profile? How's that work?
I just wrote husband instead of partner. Yeah, I was just sort of bored and like hanging out. Like, I think I was having a beer somewhere, and I just changed my Twitter profile. And next thing you know,
boom,
I was getting calls from everybody left and right.
Well, the first thing I try to ask anyone who I interview is what motivated or inspired you to take on the life that you're leading now of an actor? Was it a moment in your life where it just struck you or something forever you've wanted to do?
I saw a musical called Into the Woods by Stephen Sondheim in New York. I grew up in New York, and so, you know, my mom and I would go into the city all the time, and we had seen that show, and that I think that moment was when I was sort of like, wow, I want to do that. And so I went back to high school with this new found interest in exploring. For me, it was initially musical theater. So it was singing and acting. Then I went to NYU, and then, you know, the rest sort of happened. I graduated and took a film and TV path, but it started with theater and musical theater specifically.
So you went to New York, and then you got the lead in Ryan Caulfield, which took you to LA, right?
Correct. Yeah, that was my first job. The young rookie cop on the streets of South Philadelphia. It was a crash course for, like, little New York boy. I was thrust into, you know, hour-long television scheduling, and I was, you know, I was the title character, so I was in every scene, and they didn't really, there was not much wiggle room to sort of write me out. So I was working pretty much every day, and, you know, sometimes 16, 18, 20 hour days.
Oh, wow.
It was sort of a masterclass in how to do everything in regards to a set, because I had never been on a set before or in front of a camera. I always look back at that experience as being like a crash course in TV.
Is it a lot of pressure to go from graduating to the lead in which was at the time pretty touted? I remember the show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I felt too much pressure, because it was so, everything was just like almost, it all happened so fast, and I couldn't believe it was happening. And, you know, the show got picked up, and I was so focused on just trying to do my job the best I could. And I was on set learning stuff for 2 days. And so I'd always try and be 2 days ahead of the curve. So I'd sit on set and I'd learn my stuff for, you know, if it was a Monday, I would sit on set in my spare time and learn everything I needed to know for Wednesday, you know, mm-hmm. while we were shooting Monday. So it was just, I was just sort of like in this motion of working that I really didn't have time to sort of, you know, take inventory of what I was feeling. And I definitely felt certainly overwhelmed, but I also was beyond excited. And I thought it was wild to, you know, be able to do what I was doing. So, I don't know. And I think a lot of people had said, don't take on the pressure of the show or something. And I think I was just too green or naive. I didn't think, oh gosh, this show is riding on my shoulders. You know, when it did get canceled, I was, you know, told by everybody that, you know, it wasn't my fault. And I was like, oh, I didn't think it would have been my fault in the first place, but thanks for your reassurance. But yeah, I mean, it was a wild, wild time in my life. I just sort of, it just took a deep breath and just tried to do the best I could.
See, the one thing that, especially with you, because you have this juggernaut in your past career, so that always comes up, and I feel like it gets almost too much attention sometimes. But I feel like if I don't ask at least one Firefly question, then the audience will be mad at me. So I tried to find something you haven't been asked, and you've been asked literally everything. Is that difficult to a degree, I would imagine? You almost have to make it sound fresh, and I know that's, people don't realize that's a difficult job to do. It's almost harder than acting.
Oh,
sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk, Firefly is this just this unique experience in that every time I'm asked, you know, are you sick of being asked? I truly, truly, truly answer wholeheartedly, no. I'm not sick of talking about it. I'm not sick of telling the same stories. I'm not sick of being asked the same questions, because we loved it so much, and it was such a wonderful, wonderful experience, all of us. So, yeah, I think I could probably speak for the entire cast. Like we love coming together. You know, we do Comic Cons a lot, the cast members, and, you know, sitting on a panel, you know, doing Q&As and talking about my experience. And especially if I'm lucky enough to be sitting next to one or many of the actors from the show, it's wonderful. I feel so blessed and grateful that I was a part of something that still resonates. You know, now it's like 12 years later, I think.
Yeah, it's, I think it might be longer
now. I don't get sick. And if I go down forever being remembered as Simon Tam, I wouldn't think that was a bad thing.
Is that ever difficult as a working actor? Because you're kind of part of an iconic role.
Yeah, you know, I don't think so. It's interesting. I compare Firefly as sort of this phenomenon. So if you know what it is, or if you've seen it, 9 times out of 10, you love it and are a loyal fan. And then if you don't know what it is, I find in the industry, especially like when I walk into a room for, you know, a new project, a new movie, a new role, it's rare that I feel that I'm working against a stereotype of a Firefly, because I feel like within the industry, I'm not 100% sure how many people watched it, because it wasn't on long enough. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a hit, you know, when it was on. And so I think, you know, because the industry moves so fast that it sort of, I think, slipped through the cracks of a lot of people. So when I walk in, I find the majority of the time, the people that I'm, you know, meeting with have not seen it. So I don't really know if it does. You know, every now and then I'll walk in and, you know, someone say, I'm a huge, huge Firefly fan, and the script couldn't be further from, you know, a science fiction drama. And, you know, and then I go on and, you know, do that project. But yeah, I haven't really met much stereotyping at all.
That's good news. I want to mention, yeah, you did a remake of Brian's Song, which I thought was really good.
Yeah.
I never hear anybody talk about it. It was really good. That brings me to Beyond the Edge, which I initially thought was going to be more of a two-person story primarily, but I was kind of surprised to find you carry a lot of the movie solo.
Yeah.
What about this movie attracted you specifically?
Specifically, it was Tom Zellin, the director, because they sent it my way. I read it. I was so thoroughly confused when I read it. I was trying so hard to, you know, wrap my head around where we were in time and space. And so we ended up having a phone interview, and I just, everything I asked him, he was so quick and precise and very, very, very clear in all of his answers. And he knew the world like the back of his hand, and he knew exactly what he wanted. And he knew, when you're with a director who is just so clear, mm-hmm, then it gives me, the actor, it gives me a lot of comfort, especially given this script. Cause like on set, I would just be like, oh my gosh, like, you know, where I'd be like, Tom, he'd be like, you know, here you are on the timeline of madness or whatever. And he was just so, he just was so clear. I mean, he knew exactly what he wanted. He knew how the tone was going to be. He knew what the sets were going to be. He knew everything, hair, makeup, wardrobe. And I think just truly my conversation with him was what made me want to move forward, because I was really intrigued by it. And I kind of loved that I didn't understand it at first. And the first time I watched it, I was like, huh, I don't know if I get it, you know? And I sort of love that. And I watch it again. And then, you know, when people watch it and they say, wow, that was interesting. I don't think I got it. And I'm like, yeah, it's just, to me, I loved it because it felt like a case study, you know, mm-hmm, sort of what if, and it was asking all the big questions that I, as a person, I'm always wondering, like, you know, who are we in this vast space, and how much do our actions truly dictate, you know, what happens in our lives, you know, what's fate and what's already decided versus like, you know, what are we doing in this quote unquote universe? I loved it.
I'm glad you said that, because when I screened the movie, I had to rewind it a couple of times to to understand what was going on, which is a compliment. Yeah. That's not a bad thing. Believe me.
Right. Right. Yeah.
What were you drinking in all the plastic packets throughout the movie? What were you actually drinking?
Yeah, that was, what did props put in there?
Yeah, like what were you actually just binging alcohol throughout the entire production?
No, gosh, no. No. It was supposed to be rum. I think it was just colored water or iced tea. It had no flavor. They had asked me that before they started building them, you know, do I want something? And I didn't want anything like sugary or gross. It just, you know, colored water was great for me. But I did try some of the rum packets, because they bought so many of them. And then we were going to drink them all at the wrap party, but I tried it, and it was like, it was like gasoline. It was so, so strong. And I'm not really a huge, I like wine and beer. I'm not a big liquor person, but I didn't want them after the few attempts that I had at trying to consume them.
Well, as you're watching the movie, I'm just picturing take after take of having to down whatever's in that packet. That was a pretty fun game.
No, it's just water. Tom's wife, Missy, who was on set all the time, and after watching the movie, she said one of the favorite things that she loved that I did was that every time I did a rum packet, she's like, it really just, you, it felt like it was just foul poison going down your throat. And I was like, good. I did my job.
Yeah, you did. Is it more challenging for you to perform alone? Because you do have a lot of alone time, a lot of isolation. Or is it easier to when you're interacting with Casper?
Good question. I think, you know, it's, I don't know if it's easier. There were, again, just sort of to toot Tom's horn again, there were a lot of moments in the movie, especially with cameras as close as they were to my face, that I think, you know, years ago would have really made me super duper uncomfortable as an actor. Like, and a lot of the time we're not really saying much and there's no dialogue. And I think that also used to terrify me as an actor. Like, if I'm not speaking, how am I gonna fill the space? How am I gonna, you know, it's like every actor's internal dialogue. But I think just given the working environment that we were in, it was just so creatively uninhibiting, and Tom just sort of let me and Casper. I thought Casper found some really extraordinary nuances where he wasn't seemingly doing much of anything. But I think that's those moments where not much happening, there's not much dialogue, but you're sort of watching these men just sort of be. Those are some of my favorite parts of the film.
Can you talk about how you get into the state of mind of that isolation and depression? Because that is, and especially when you're going back and forth in time, I assume that can be a little difficult as an actor.
Yeah, that was a big one. That was a combination of, I don't know. I spent a lot of time in the bunks by myself, even when I wasn't working. I was, you know, laying in, because I found the bunks to be the, like, just waking up there day after day after day, one of the more depressing parts of the story. Mm-hmm. I also was without my family for the first time in a long time. It was the longest stretch that I had been without the kids. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any days off, so I couldn't, you know, fly home. And they came to visit one weekend. But I think it was a combination of that. And I also got a little sick, you know, which I never believe in coincidences, but there was a bit of a head cold that I had, and it was putting a lot of pressure on my eyes. So I just think it was an accumulation of, like, working with the cold and missing the family, and just sort of the set was so extraordinary, and it was eerie. I felt like I was working on a Kubrick film. Like, it felt just tonally, it felt very a little depressing and a little off. So I didn't. It was one of those films where I didn't feel like I did much of anything. It felt very easy for me.
You did a lot, especially when you're torturing Casper's character throughout the movie. I thought that was a nice touch. I don't know. I assume it was scripted, but that's a,
yeah,
that's a fun
that was
touch.
Fun. That was fun. When we shot all that stuff first, and then we were moving on to the other stuff, but they were friendlier, and I was like, no, I kind of miss when Abe was such a dick. You know, it was so fun. can I say that on that?
Yeah. No, you're okay. Fine. You're fine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had a great time with the taunting and the madness and all of that stuff.
Did you actually shoot the movie linear then, and then it was just broken up in editing?
Yeah, so we shot the movie around our beards, basically. So we just worked backwards from the scruffiest, and then he shaved first, and then I shaved, and then took our hair down, and then, you know, we worked backwards, the most grungy to the most clean cut. We shot in that order, and then editing did their magic.
I guess that's the that's important when you actually can grow a beard. I don't know what that's like. So
yeah, that was my first time growing a beard.
In
it
your
was
life?
Horrible. Yeah, it's so uncomfortable. You want to, like, or I wanted to, like, claw my face off.
So in your life, you've never actually grown one. You saved it just for this movie.
Yeah, that was the first time I grew a beard. And I when I talked to Tom, I was like, I don't know if I can do this. So I'll just, you know, I'll grow as much as I can. And lo and behold, it grew. But it still isn't as, like, as thick as I'd wanted it to be. Because I think I let it go for 6 or 7 or 8 weeks, maybe.
That gives a performance of its own by the end.
I know, right?
The honeymooner scene. Can you can you talk about how, and it's hard to explain because I don't want to spoil it, obviously, but there is literally a honeymooner scene. And how was that to film? And did you guys ever film it switching spots?
Switching spots meaning switching characters?
Yeah, like you do Norton.
Oh, no. Well, No, we didn't do that. I was so scared to do that. I was dreading that day from like the second I got there, and everyone thought it was so funny that I was so nervous about that day. But I was so freaking nervous. I think there was something about doing in my own version of an impersonation, kind of. That stuff kind of scares me. And I don't know, I just kept watching old episodes over and over and over again, you know, in my hotel room at night, and just tried my best to, you know, commit to, you know, just doing my version. Tom didn't want it to be 100% Jackie Gleason, so there was a little more freedom for me there to not have to try and like hit it, you know, on the head with the whole impersonation thing. But I had a fantastic day when all was said and done. I had a lot of fun that day. And yeah, it wasn't nearly as bad as I was anticipating it being.
It works great. And Casper seems like he's having a grand time.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah, he had a great time. He was so excited about doing it.
So how close is this to you? Because Abe is very much a very thoughtful intellectual, and Richards is kind of the military jock who just, I need to follow orders. He's that guy. How much of a departure is that from the real Sean and Casper?
You know, Casper, it's so funny. Every now and then on set, I was like, you need to do like a half an hour. You need to do, or a half hour comedy. Like he's one of the funniest guys, and he gets these like, you know, super tough action hero roles. And I think, playing the lieutenant on this, you know, everything by the book, you know, I think he does that really well, but he's one of the goofiest people I've ever met who doesn't stop with the jokes, which is kind of funny. And I think, you know, we embody these characters, and we can't help but bring, there's always parts of us coming from them. So, you know, even if I think, oh, I'm not like this guy at all, like I am this guy, and you just happen to draw from here or there, or if you think you don't, you really know how you can be similar in any way, you know, things come forward throughout the process. You're like, oh, I get this. I get this. This experience, I've had this in my life, or I am more in line with this character than I thought I was. But yeah, I don't know. It's a great question, because sometimes we bring a lot of ourselves, and then sometimes we stretch and, you know, find things that we didn't know were there.
Well, I will tell you, I'm a big fan of, because you have several moments of where you loosen up throughout the movie, and your characters have typically been in the past very serious, stoic almost in a lot of respects. Yes. And when you actually, like those moments where you're torturing him, it's fun to watch. You should really do some more of that. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was fun.
So what's next for you after promoting this one, or what are you working on now?
We have another film called People You May Know, which is also another independent film. It's a romantic comedy by director J.C. Falcone. So I have that coming out. I also have I just did a short with June Squibb, lovely, lovely, lovely actress. I did this beautiful little film that's starting to make the festival circuits now. And then I do the voice of Nightwing for the Warner Brothers Batman universe. And so I have a new Nightwing movie coming out too.
Yeah, how do you enjoy doing that? Because that's a lot different from more standard performances.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like, I still don't even know what I'm doing. I was offered Nightwing. I thought it was just going to be, you know, a one-shot thing, and naturally assumed I'd be fired because I didn't know what I was doing. And then when they invited me back for a second movie, I was like, well, they must be crazy, and I'm going to be fired. And then when I came back for my third movie, and I finally felt like, okay, I'm finding a bit of ease with this, so I wasn't freaking out and thought, well, I must be doing something right. And third movie I had a tremendous amount of fun with. My only thing is I've never worked with another actor in the booth. I do everything by myself. So I find that's a little challenging at times, also kind of liberating at times, you know. But yeah, it's a different beast. I really enjoy it. I love the Nightwing fans that I've met. I mean, I've become a diehard Nightwing fan myself, but you know, there's something to be said. Like, I usually screen the movie, you know, at WonderCon with 3,000 fans, and there's nothing like that to be able to watch that with that audience.
Yeah, you're kind of, I gotta let you go, but you're kind of, you're a geek icon in many respects. You've got Firefly, Serenity, you run Arrow, Shrapnel, Nightwing, you're all over.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Well, thank you for coming by. I really appreciate you taking time out. I know I gotta let you go to your
Absolutely.
Your next thing. Best of luck with the release.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming by. Take care.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
There you go, guys. That was my interview with Sean Marr on his new film, Beyond the Edge, which you can now find via video on demand. Hope you enjoyed it. Very nice guy. It was a great conversation. I hope you did get something out of it, and I hope you have a new appreciation for Sean as an actor. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can, so I hope you enjoyed this one. Remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has an episode each week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, as well as all those other outlets I've already said like 6 times. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you guys head into the theater or sit on your couch and watch Beyond the Edge, buy popcorn. We'll be right back.